A few weeks back, we talked to Roger Tyers, an environmental sociologist at the University of Southampton. He had just arrived in Beijing, having taken the Trans-Siberian Railway and other overland transportation to get there. He needed to do climate change research in China and felt it would be hypocritical to fly. Well, now Roger Tyers is on his way home. Hello, Roger.
Good morning, Jim.
Where are you now?
I am in a small town called Listvyanka, which is on the coast of Lake Baikal in Russia, in East Siberia. It's about an hour's bus ride from Irkutsk. And yeah, it's a small little tourist town, I guess. On the shore of the biggest lake in the world. I just got here last night, and it's very calm and quiet and quite pretty and very different from Beijing, which is where I set off a couple of days ago.
How long before you arrive back in Southampton, out of interest?
Oh, crikey. I still have 11 days to go. Yeah, till I'll be back home.
11 days. Did you get reaction from the last time we talked on Sunday morning? Because we did.
Right. Yes. No, I did as well through my social media and quite a few kind of comments, people saying, you know, it's a mixture of people who just find the travel aspect kind of really interesting, and also people kind of thinking about flying, and a few stories from people who'd tried to reduce their own flights, and or just people saying, oh, I'd never thought about this before. So, you know, good on you for raising this issue. So it's been really nice to get that kind of feedback, especially, you know, I'm out here on my own, so it's nice when any kind of interest from anybody is nice and encouraging.
We got a lot of good on news on your behalf as well, plus the occasional admonition about your smoking on the railway station at Irkutsk, but we won't go into that again. you're on the old Trans-Mongolian train, or have you got off that now?
I've got off that now. So, yeah, I was on that from Beijing through to Irkutsk.
Right.
Yeah, so that's a Chinese-run train. And it was interesting. That was full of kind of bucket list, fairly older Chinese people. When I got to the station at Beijing, there was lots of them who'd all splashed out on matching T-shirts that have the official Beijing Moscow logo emblazoned on. And it was obvious that for some of these people, this was, you know, like a trip of the lifetime to take this kind of historic route from China all the way to Moscow.
You will have been used to fast trains in China, wouldn't you?
Yes. Oh, much, much faster than this. Yes. I mean, the trains in China really impressed me. For example, I took one from Beijing to Shanghai. Average speed was over 300 kilometers an hour. Maximum speed was 350. You can go from Beijing to Shanghai in under 4.5 hours, which is about 800 miles, which I calculated is about the length of all of the UK from Land's End to John O'Groats, and you could do it, you know, in an afternoon. So the trains in China are probably the best I've taken anywhere. So it's been quite a shift in gears to get back on this. You know, it's kind of a museum piece, really, the Trans-Mongolian and the Trans-Siberian. Their maximum speed is about 120 kilometers an hour. They're old. And it's not quite as luxurious. Maybe one day they'll upgrade it to the Chinese standard. And then who knows, maybe you'll be able to cross Russia in, you know, a couple of days rather than a week.
And that gives us an insight into the economic differences between China and Russia. All right. Can you remind us again, please, Roger, of what you went to Beijing for and how that went?
Yeah. So the reason I'm doing this is I'm doing some field work studying Chinese people who've studied in the UK and at universities and since gone back to China. And I wanted to find out if their experience in a Western country had any impact on them in terms of their kind of environmental awareness or environmental behaviors, that things like recycling or conserving energy. Most people in China don't leave China. I think it's only about less than 10% of China has a passport, and even fewer of them actually use it. So these people are in a privileged position where they're able to compare. And in terms of what I found out, it was slightly dispiriting, I would say, if I'm honest, yeah. Because a lot of them said, you know, they do have more kind of green awareness, having studied, you know, in the UK. They said, you know, it's obviously a bigger issue. People talk about kind of global warming, whereas it's not a big topic in China. They did say some things kind of influenced them. So now a few of them said that they never really recycled before they came to the UK, and now, you know, they know why it's important to separate your plastic and your kitchen waste and things like that. And they try to do that now they're back in China, although, you know, they would say a lot of the time they feel like the only ones doing it. So it can be quite demotivating when you see other people aren't bothering. Felt to me like the UK conversation back in the 90s, you know, when we in Western countries talk about kind of carbon footprints and, you know, domestic energy use and where your energy comes from, whether it's coal or solar or nuclear or whatever, or even getting onto things like flying, these things don't really occur to many Chinese people, and it's not part of the national conversation. Lots of them said that they do take the trains in for internal Chinese journeys, and they won't fly. But they do that not because it's green, but because the trains are really fast and, right. and quite cheap.
Right.
Yeah. And another one was lots of them. There's quite a significant shift to electric cars. But again, that's not because people are, you know, suddenly want to save the planet. It's because Chinese cities, if you want to enter the city, there's kind of a lottery to get a license plate. That's because they have too many cars. But if you have an electric car, you go right to the top of the queue and you automatically get a license plate for your city.
Electric cars are something, of course. So a paucity of public initiatives and awareness, which is, I imagine, from your point of view, quite dispiriting. But interesting research and interesting results. On Twitter, you showed us a hermetically sealed sports complex filled with clean air. Is pollution really that bad in China?
Yeah, air pollution is a big issue. There was one day in Hangzhou, as I entered the city, it looked like something out of Blade Runner. It was a very hazy day at the end of the day. So the sun was coming down, these huge buildings all kind of blanketed in some kind of haze. And yeah, the PM count was very high that day for particulate matter. You know, it's quite sad when you have to have these hermetically sealed kind of bubbles for children to play in.
Mm.
I stayed at my friend's house, and he's married to a Chinese woman, and they have a young boy, and they have to make trade-offs between, well, do we air the house out because it's kind of quite stuffy and warm, but if we do and open all the windows and just let some fresh air in, but if we do that, then basically we're letting in pollution. So no, we'll put the AC on and close all the windows. And you know, that's it's quite startling, really, when you see that's the reality for millions of people. The kind of big dirty elephant in the room in China is always anything that's powered from electricity is probably powered from coal as well. So
yeah.
It's kind of displacement. So it might make the streets, you know, cleaner in terms of the air. But if you kind of zoom out to the bigger picture, you know, somewhere, usually outside of the cities, there's a whole lot of coal being burnt to power those e-bikes and everything else. So given that air pollution is such a big issue, then I think a lot of Chinese people would take the coal-fired electricity and have cleaner streets. Yeah.
Yeah, I understand. We haven't talked a lot about no-flying decisions with you this time, but we did last time, and I think it's well enough understood. What will you see from your train window for the next week or so?
Oh, well, I think I've done the nice part. The nice part was the Trans-Mongolian. Yeah, the Trans-Mongolian railway that I've just done was really quite epic, going across the Gobi Desert and through Mongolia. and around Lake Baikal that I've done over the last 2 days. So that's kind of the good bit done now. unfortunately, I think the next what is it? 3 days, 3 day trip, 4 nights from here to Moscow will be a whole lot of trees and not much else. I think
Right.
it gets quite interesting around the Ural Mountains. But in a sense, Jim, that's kind of good because it might mean I'm actually able to focus on analyzing some of my data and starting to write things up from my trip. So I might actually get some work done rather than constantly looking out the window at pretty landscapes.
Are they missing you at Southampton University?
I don't know, but I'm missing them anyway. So,
Would you be allowed to do this again, do you think? They're obviously sympathetic, which is nice, but will they let you do it again?
If I come home alive and I've got some good data and I'm able to produce some good research from it, then I guess why not? And I hope that for other maybe less extreme academic trips, there might be slowly a bit of a move towards, you know, encouraging people to get on the train, yeah, rather than always jumping on flights.
You want people to notice that you've been able to go to China by train and to rethink their general behaviours. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think I just want to show people, you know, what's possible, what's practical, and sometimes you need to do quite an extreme example for people to kind of, you know, sit up and take notice. I would be very happy with that outcome.
Okay. At least it'll be properly summer by the time you get back, because the English summer is currently rubbish from the looks of it.
Yeah, I'm told that I'm not missing much. I think it's been raining all week back home, so
One question I forgot just finally to ask you when we first talked. Do you like flying? I mean, some people, I suppose, who hate flying might use this no-fly movement as an excuse for virtue signalling and so on. But do you actually like flying? You've actually given up quite a lot.
I must admit, I do like flying. I was part of the Air Cadets for a couple of years. My brother was trained to be an RAF pilot when he was younger. I mean, I think for some people, it's they don't like flying anyway, and then they can. It's not a big sacrifice for them to give it up. But for me, yeah, actually, I do enjoy it.
We wish you all the best with this long haul back, Roger. It's very good of you to talk to us again.
It's been my pleasure, Jim. Thank you for yeah, thanks for the interest and thanks to all your listeners for their support.
Dr. Roger Tyers.